Can you get faster on a vegan diet? Welcome to the Science of Getting Faster podcast, where we cut through the headlines, talk directly to the researchers to find out what their studies suggest, what they don't, and where their research is heading. With us on the podcast today, we have Dr. Alistair Montine. Welcome to the podcast, Alistair.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Thanks for coming on. So could you start by discussing what are the challenges for specifically for endurance athletes following a vegan diet?
Good question. So I think you start from the perspective of the challenges you have for any athlete following any diet, which is just to compose a diet that optimally meets their needs for them and their life, but also their sporting performance. Now, when you have a vegan diet, you're obviously starting from some degree from a point of you're avoiding certain things. So that might add certain complications to that equation. So you then need to specifically consider how you might structure that diet, avoiding those specific animal-based foods, but still able to produce optimal performance, optimal recovery from exercise and optimal training adaptation.
Yeah, definitely. So are there things that, like we're saying, we're avoiding meat-based products or animal-based products. So are there things that we might struggle to get if we're not conscious about the specific, the plant-based sources that we're consuming?
Yeah, so from a protein perspective to begin with, non-animal derived protein sources tend to be a little bit lower in essential amino acids, and also a little bit lower in an amino acid called leucine, which is particularly important for upregulating those processes that lead us to grow new tissue and to remodel tissue. Then you've also got some micronutrient considerations as well alongside that. So a vegan athlete might be a little bit more predisposed to perhaps vitamin B12 deficiency or perhaps iron deficiency as well. So there are certainly certain considerations you might have for a vegan athlete that perhaps wouldn't be as much of a worry for a non-vegan athlete.
Right. So if we're to focus specifically on the protein, the challenge of consuming enough protein, which is what we're going to be discussing today, could you explain? So you mentioned amino acids. So first of all, what is protein and what is it made up of? And what do we need to be aware of when we're ensuring that we get enough of it?
Yeah, so protein is a macromolecule that largely determines the structural basis of tissues and also their functional capabilities. So we obtain protein from the diet, but we are also made up of proteins ourselves. The structural component of our muscle is made up of protein. Now, protein is made up of chains of amino acids. There's 20 amino acids in the human body, 9 of which are essential, which means that we can't synthesize them. So we have to get those from our diet, and then the rest are what we describe as non-essential. In terms of why protein is perhaps important for athletic performance, and with specific regard to an endurance athlete, first of all, you've got a recovery aspect. So we need protein to support a process called muscle protein synthesis. And this is, as it sounds, just a synthesis of new proteins within the body. This, for a start, will allow us to recover after exercise, perhaps repair and replace some of those damaged proteins in response to the stress of exercise. So this might mean just forming new proteins within the contractile filaments of muscle itself, perhaps in that connective tissue and in other surrounding tissues. It's also going to allow us to replace some of the amino acids that we've oxidized during exercise. So during endurance exercise, some of the energy to fuel that exercise, if you like, is going to come from amino acids, only a small proportion, maybe 5 or 10%. But endurance athletes have very high energy expenditure. So even though it's a small percentage, in absolute terms, it could be quite a lot. 5% of £1 million is still quite a lot of money, to give a little bit of an analogy. And then we've also got the element of remodeling after exercise. So we have that exercise stress that acts as a stimulus to upregulate a number of processes, And then we need amino acids to allow us to have that protein synthesis, which then allows us to remodel after exercise. So we're more functionally capable the next time we do exercise. To a degree, that's what any training is. It's just that continual remodeling process such that we form new, more functional or more proteins after exercise. That then allows us to perform better in the future, if you like.
Yeah, so you discussed there the more functional proteins, and that is that to do with the stress and then the adaptation response? So we're kind of changing the, like you're saying, the function of the protein. And mm-hmm. then on the other hand, you said that to build new proteins. So is that the hypertrophy, or that's gaining more lean muscle mass? Are those the two distinctions there?
Yes and no, I suppose. So you, as you say, hypertrophy is the accretion or the addition of new proteins within a muscle. But even endurance exercise, where we typically don't see large amounts of hypertrophy afterwards, we still see increases in muscle protein synthesis rates. So even though we're not getting a large degree of hypertrophy following that, we're still seeing an upregulation in protein synthesis, which probably does just represent perhaps replacing damaged proteins, replacing them with more functional proteins, perhaps. And we also get an increase in mitochondrial protein synthesis following exercise. And I would imagine you also get increases in protein synthesis with things like angiogenesis, perhaps.
What's angiogenesis there? Sorry.
So the formation of new blood cells, new blood vessels, sorry. So capillarization, essentially. And also protein synthesis associated with other biological processes in response to that endurance strain adaptation as well. So, yes, typically when we talk about protein synthesis, we do tend to think of muscle hypertrophy. The endurance exercise as well is still going to increase muscle protein synthesis as well.
Yeah, so we don't necessarily need to be have the goal of gaining large amounts of muscle mass for protein to be beneficial to our adaptations and endurance performance.
No, of course not. No.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we're obviously discussing vegan protein versus animal-based protein. What are the differences? What kind of are our sources of protein, and what are the challenges then of consuming protein solely based on vegan sources?
Yeah, so I guess if you go in to start off with different sources, when we think of animal proteins, we would think of dairy proteins and obviously meat. Then when we think of vegan proteins, we're looking more at plant-derived protein sources, fungal-derived protein sources, beans, pulses, that sort of thing. Animal-derived proteins tend to be a little bit higher in essential amino acid content. Not hugely so, but a relatively significant amount. And as I mentioned earlier, also slightly higher in leucine content. Leucine is particularly important for stimulating muscle protein synthesis. So we have this slight discrepancy between the animal-based and plant-based sources in terms of their essential amino acid and leucine content. Some plant-based sources are also deficient in one or more amino acids as well, essential amino acids. For example, pea protein is very low in methionine. Brown rice, I believe, is very low in lysine. So they are what you might describe as not complete protein sources either. The other thing to consider when we talk about animal and plant-based sources is that, generally speaking, plant-based sources tend to come with a relatively large amount of carbohydrate and fiber, whereas this might not be the case when we're talking about animal-derived sources. However, we end up talking about supplementary protein anyway, in which case a lot of that fiber and carbohydrate that comes alongside that protein food has been removed during processing anyway.
Okay, so if it's a greater challenge then to consume the amino acids, your paper that we're going to be diving into today talks about mycoproteins. And how is that a viable solution to this challenge?
I think it's it's part of a solution. It's only a single component of it, I think. So mycoprotein is a fungal-derived protein source produced via aerobic fermentation from a fungus called Fusarium vananatum. So you start with this very small amount of fungus, and you give it carbohydrates, minerals, other nutrients, and it essentially grows, and you can produce a very large amount of product very quickly. I think the fermenters are something like 150,000 litres, and you end up producing a couple of tons an hour. So it's a very efficient mode of producing a high-protein food, and of course it is non-animal derived. It is suitable for vegans. Once they've got that raw product, there is then processed into meat replacement type products, which can then be incorporated into the diet. So it's a relatively sustainable and also high protein, high fiber food that we can incorporate into the diet.
Okay, so would that have more amino acids than, say, the solely plant-based products, like you were saying, the soy protein, pea protein, etc.?
No, not necessarily. It's a complete profile of amino acids, so it's not deficient in any of those amino acids. But it's really relatively typical of non-animal derived proteins in terms of its percentage essential amino acid.
Okay, so yeah, that leads us into your research then. What was the question then that you had going into this project?
So just to provide a little bit of context, we'd already tested mycoprotein to see if it stimulated muscle protein synthesis over a very acute period of time. So in response to a single meal, if you like, could it upregulate and support muscle protein synthesis? And we did that in rested tissue and in exercise tissue. And we found out that it did indeed robustly stimulate protein synthesis. So then this study, which was sort of the next question along, if you like, was could we incorporate it into the diet to support muscle protein synthesis over a number of days? And then in turn, could we combine it with resistance training to support resistance training adaptation, so muscle hypertrophy? Could you use this as a high quality protein component of a vegan diet over a number of weeks to support muscle growth, essentially? So initially, it was a very mechanistic study. We had phase one, where we were looking at the actual protein synthesis, which underpins that subsequent remodeling effect. And then we were looking at the remodeling longer term. Did people get stronger? Did people get more muscular when following a vegan diet alongside resistance training? And we compared in both phases to a high protein omnivorous diet. So what we'd consider to be a gold standard diet for adding muscle mass.
Okay. So like you were saying, the first part was looking mechanistically at the remodeling process. And then the second part, you were looking at the building lean muscle mass. And earlier we discussed how protein what's the function of protein for endurance athletes? How does this question basically, is it a relevant question for endurance athletes? If it performs one role, can we assume that it also performs the other roles of protein, such as, like you're saying, the remodeling and then the recovery aspects?
Definitely. I think you can look at this study as a test of whether, for a start, whether mycoprotein represents a high quality protein, then also proof of concept whether you can add a significant amount of muscle mass with a vegan diet. And both of those things are a test of protein quality, essentially. So whilst there might not be direct relevance for endurance training, I think what you could perhaps take away from this is that you can compose a vegan diet to be of adequate protein quality to facilitate training adaptation. I'm speculating a little bit, but I don't see why the same wouldn't be true for endurance training as well, that you couldn't get the same adaptation following a vegan diet with high quality protein components as you could when you're looking at resistance training.
Yeah, definitely. So if we kind of zoom back a little bit, we could view the question as, do microproteins, are they sufficient high quality proteins to support training adaptations in general?
Absolutely. And then proof of concept also that a vegan diet per se can support resistance training adaptation and hypertrophy to the same extent as an omnivorous diet.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so who did you recruit for your study? Who were the participants?
Yeah, so we recruited young, healthy individuals with some resistance training experience, although you wouldn't describe them as necessarily well-trained. So sort of recreationally active people with resistance training experience.
Okay, and the... were they previously vegan? Were they consuming meat? What was their diet history?
The vast majority, just following what you describe as an omnivorous Western diet, so a relatively typical Western diet.
Okay. Would you expect that to impact? Would the response to vegan, like the microproteins, differ, do you think, based on their prior diet?
That's a good question. To the best of my knowledge and what's available in the literature, no. But the truth is we don't really know. There might be some sort of adaptation period to switching to a very different diet that may favour adaptation, but equally so it might be deleterious to adaptation. So honestly, I can't answer that.
Yeah. Well, how long was your study, I suppose?
Yeah, so the initial phase was 3 days. So that's where we put them on a completely vegan microprotein-rich diet or a high-protein omnivorous diet. And we measured that protein synthetic response for a period of 3 days. They then went into a 10-week period where they followed either a majority vegan diet, again, with quite a lot of microprotein in the diet as well, or that high-protein omnivorous diet. Whilst carrying out resistance training 5 times a week. So we had a 10-week period for which they could adapt to that resistance training stimulus.
Wow, so it's quite a lengthy period of time. So, yeah, it would seem that if we were going to make that switch, then we might see those... We don't know, like you said, we don't know that length of time that it would, these adaptations might occur, but I suppose a question for future research. How much protein, were the groups equally matched in terms of protein, and how much microprotein did the vegan athletes consume?
So in the initial phase of the study, they were having 1.8 grams per kilo of protein per day. In that vegan group, microprotein accounting for the majority of that protein within the diet, so more than half. So that was 1.8 grams per kilo per day in both groups. And we, in that phase of the study, we literally provided every single thing they ate. So you're controlling every single calorie, every single gram of protein that they're having. When they moved into the second phase of the study, just because it was a longer period of time, it's very difficult to completely control the diet for that length of time. We gave them targets for the protein that we wanted them to have. And we wanted them to aim for 2 grams per kilogram of body mass. But the diets were self-selected. We provided them with meat products in the omnivorous group and a milk protein supplement. And then in the vegan group, we provided them with as much microprotein and as much quorn, which is how microprotein is sold in the UK. That's the company that sells it. So when it's processed into products. So we provided them with as much microprotein and quorn as they wanted, provided them with targets. They then went away, tried to meet those targets. We discussed that with them every week and provided live feedback on the diet. And by the end of the study, they're having around 2 grams per kilo per day, 2 grams per kilogram body mass per day. In both groups through that 10-week period.
Wow, so that's quite a high protein consumption. How does that compare to, say, the recommended daily intake for protein?
Yeah, so the RDA for protein is 0.8 grams per kilogram per day. But generally speaking, we would advise people who are partaking in resistance training to have at least 1.6 grams per kilogram per day, or perhaps a little bit above that, up towards 1.8, 2 grams per kilogram.
Okay, so if you were to compare the omnivorous consuming diet and then the vegan diet of people, of say someone of 60 kilograms throughout the day, what would that look? What did that look like for the two athletes? How did they differ?
So we advised them wherever possible to try and distribute the protein evenly throughout the day. And I suppose other than the sources of protein that they consume, and it didn't differ a great deal. It would just be that much of the omnivorous group, much of those high quality protein components would have been composed of milk, meat proteins, and then with a milk protein supplement. Whereas in that vegan group, much of those high quality components were composed of meat replacement products and then a microprotein supplement. So other than the sources, they were, you know, remarkably similar in how it was structured, and then in terms of the final target that they reached for protein intake.
Okay, so if it was, say, a 60-kilogram athlete and they're trying to consume then two grams per kilogram of body weight, that would be, you know, 120 grams per day. And then if you split that over four meals or three meals and a snack, it would be like 40 grams, like split up.
Yeah, okay. Just so. Yeah. Exactly so.
Okay, cool. So the other macronutrients, was it difficult to, like you said earlier, when consuming a vegan diet, often consuming the plant-based protein, you naturally take in more carbohydrates. Was that something you had to control for?
Well, not particularly. In that second phase, we wanted them to be in a very slight caloric surplus, just because that creates conditions for as much hypertrophy as possible. So no, it largely took care of itself. We didn't particularly mind whether the rest of the energy came from fat or carbohydrate. We anticipated that it'd end up just being a relatively even split between the two. To note, we perhaps would advise them to have a little bit more carbohydrate if we thought that was dropping a little bit low, just to support training intensity. But no, it wasn't something we had to particularly control for. And then when you look at the final data for the study, fat and carbohydrate are relatively well matched between the two groups in the study.
Okay, so perhaps something not... there's something that endurance athletes don't need to worry about, particularly endurance athletes, I suppose, considering the greater carbohydrate needs.
No, I think that's that probably is one thing that would work quite well on a vegan diet, that you are getting a relatively high proportion of carbohydrate. And obviously, endurance athletes, there is that real need for a high carbohydrate intake. So no, I think that works in a vegan diet's favour, perhaps.
Yeah, so you had them resistance training in order to provide the optimal conditions for muscle protein synthesis. What did that look like?
So that was training 5 times a week. Each major muscle group trained twice a week with relatively high frequency, high volume, and also high intensity. So we're just trying to provide as big a stimulus as possible, just to drive that increase in muscle protein synthesis and subsequently to drive that accretion of tissue. So it was very hard resistance training, essentially. Quite a burden on the participants, but quite enjoyable as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Did you supplement the vegan athletes with anything throughout this 10-week period?
We did. So we, first of all, we gave them a protein supplement, which was just some microprotein. That was just to try and boost the amount of microprotein that they had in the diet, and also just to make sure that they got to that protein target that we were advising them on. We also gave them some creatine as well, just because we wanted to, if we had not have provided that creatine, it might be that those in the omnivorous group would have had slightly higher muscle creatine concentrations, and therefore we perhaps wouldn't be testing protein quality per se. Other factors would be coming in, creating a little bit of noise. So we did supplement with creatine to try and negate those non-protein aspects of the diet, just because our main objective was to look at protein per se and how that influenced the training adaptation. So yes, a protein supplement and also some creatine, but nothing in addition to that.
Okay. What is the function of creatine? And is that applicable to endurance athletes if they were to go on a vegan diet?
Potentially. So creatine essentially supports work output during intense bouts of exercise. And it has been shown to promote muscle hypertrophy, perhaps just by allowing you to do a little bit more training volume at high intensities. It tends to come with a little bit of weight gain, just in the form of accretion of water in the muscle. So it's certainly less used for endurance athletes, but there may be circumstances, sort of middle distance endurance, where it could be of use in terms of supporting power output and things like that, and perhaps a retention of tissue in an aggressive dietary phase. But in the main, perhaps less pertinent to an endurance athlete.
Yeah, so something to consider, possibly.
Perhaps, yes. Yeah, it's certainly something that you are naturally, you tend to get it in meat and animal products. If you are following a vegan diet, you're probably obtaining a little bit less of that from dietary sources. So if you did want to improve your muscle creatine concentrations, you would probably need to look to supplement.
Okay. So you had your participants in either group, the vegan group or the omnivorous group, and you had them consume that for 10 weeks whilst they were doing the resistance training. What did you find then? What were your results?
So we took multiple measures of muscle size throughout that period. So we took DEXA scans, which gives you a nice measure of whole body lean mass. We then took MRI scans of the thigh, which gives you the size and volume of individual muscles. So your quadriceps, hamstrings, adductor muscles. And we also took muscle biopsies as well, so that you can look at the change in size of individual muscle fibers. And across all three of those measures, we didn't see any difference in terms of the training-induced increase in muscle size between the two groups. So essentially both groups, whether they be on that vegan diet or whether they were on the omnivorous diet, adapted just to the same extent. And the same was true for a number of strength measures we also took. So changes in muscle size, changes in muscle strength, we didn't see any difference between the two groups in terms of the increase.
Was that a surprise to you, or was that in line with your expectations?
It was probably in line with expectations, because we did have that that acute data that suggested that microprotein was a very high quality protein source. And while we were running that study, some more data emerged in the field showing a parity between animal and plant-based sources when they were consumed in large enough quantities, which made us think that provided that that vegan group was having that high quality component, that microprotein, and provided that they were eating enough protein, they would see an equivalent adaptation between the two groups. Although the findings probably do appear surprising on the face of it, yes.
Yeah, definitely. It goes against, it might be a surprising finding for our listeners, and in some ways a pleasant finding, especially for those who are motivated to be vegan.
Absolutely. There's certainly a narrative within the scientific literature, and to some degree justified, although there is evidence to the contrary. But there is this narrative that plant-based sources are significantly inferior in their capacity to stimulate protein synthesis and then also to support training adaptation. And obviously these results somewhat contradict that narrative.
Yeah, definitely. Did you find that there were individual differences within the results, or was this a consistent finding across the board?
You whenever you're looking at training adaptation, you're going to see some individual differences, just that different people have a different predisposition for muscle hypertrophy, for example, as they do for any sort of phenotypic adaptation. But no, it's consistent improvements across the board, really, just to different extents between individuals.
Okay, so is there anyone then you wouldn't recommend a vegan diet for?
Oh, that's a very good question. I suppose there's more than, I'm speculating here, but I suppose there's more than one way in which you could compose a vegan diet. I was going to say, first of all, that perhaps if you had significant digestive issues, that some of the fiber, certainly in the diet that we provided, could be problematic. But I suspect if you were very considered in how you put your diet together, that you could largely negate that even on a vegan diet.
How would you recommend those athletes put their diet together, say if they do have digestive issues?
I'd have to think about that in a bit more detail, but perhaps just avoiding some of those very high fiber and very bulky choices. But I think largely it would just come down to personal preference, whether you follow a vegan diet or not.
Okay, is the microproteins, are they typically high in fiber?
They are, yes, very high in fiber. Okay. So a mixture of chitin, which is a fiber typically found in insect exoskeletons, I think, and also beta-glucan fiber as well. So it's quite useful in that regard, as you can think of it as a very high protein food, but it's also a relatively effective way of supplementing your diet with fiber.
Yeah, definitely. Off the top of your head, what are the very high fiber sources of plant-based protein?
I suppose foods like lentils, pulses and beans, then just vegetables in general are all relatively high in fiber, which tend to form a large proportion of most vegan diets, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Are there any that you can think of that we might gravitate towards if we were worried about consuming too much fiber? Is there anything that is slightly less, has slightly less fiber?
I suppose any white flour, any white rice, white pasta, you just then run into the issue of perhaps they're slightly lower in that protein content. But if you wanted high protein content but low fiber, that's perhaps where you would gravitate more towards a protein supplement, where it's had those fibrous components, generally speaking, removed during its processing. So a pea protein isolate or a wheat protein isolate or some sort of vegan protein blend, that's going to be high in protein but then low in fiber, so you can get that protein component without the high fiber content.
Okay, great. Yeah, the vegan protein powders, say, are they generally composed so that they are a complete protein, or do we have to be careful about which brands we consume, or should we look out for specific combinations?
I'm not sure on specific brands or not, but you can get vegan protein blends, which in all likelihood will have been composed to provide that complete protein source. They'll have taken one protein that may be deficient in, say, lysine, and they'll have combined it with another protein that isn't deficient in lysine to try and bump up the amount of that amino acid that is deficient in. Sorry, what was the second part of that question?
Just as there are specific combinations that work well together. So like you were saying, there's some that are high in lysine. Like say if there's, because we often see these vegan protein powders now for sale. And should we look out for specific combinations to ensure that they are complete proteins?
I'm sure there's numerous ways that you could combine different sources, but an example might be that I've seen it suggested you might combine pea protein, which is low in methionine, with brown rice, which is low in lysine, and thereby combining the two, you get a complete protein source. So I'd like to think that most producers of vegan protein blends have done the due diligence and have come up with a complete protein source. But that being said, even if you were to have a non-animal derived protein that was deficient in a single amino acid, I'm not sure that it'd have that greater effect at a single meal. It's perhaps something that we want to consider more for the diet in its entirety.
Okay. Yeah, great. So if we're to recap that then, so both groups were able to stimulate muscle protein synthesis to the same extent, and that's the omnivorous diet and the vegan diet over the 10-week period. And if we want to avoid eating too much fiber on the vegan diet, we might gravitate towards some protein supplements such as protein powder on a vegan diet.
Perfect. That was nicely summarized. Better than I
I don't think so. So we asked some of our athletes for questions, seeing as this is a very popular topic and one that's relevant, more so now more than ever. So I'll just jump into those. So we'll start with, what are the risks to missing out on certain nutrients for all aspects of training and also for mental health on a vegan diet?
I've no idea on the mental health one, but I think specific nutrients, it might be the iron or vitamin B12. Vegan athletes may be more at risk of deficiency in those nutrients and therefore may want to supplement with those. I guess if they cause some sort of degradation in health, that's going to inhibit the amount of training that you can do, how well you can recover. And over time, you're just not going to be able to accrue as much training volume, which will subsequently be negatively affecting performance. So B12 and iron are perhaps the two that are most frequently cited as being important, that would be germane for a vegan athlete. And then if it was more someone who was doing concurrent training or more towards resistance training, then you'd also put creatine into that conversation as well, I think.
Okay, is it worth athletes getting those measured, say, in blood tests, like the iron and the B12, before supplementing?
If you can do, yes. I think that would be determine whether you are actually deficient in those nutrients, and then that's a good moving forward. You know, then know for sure whether it's worth your while to do so.
Yeah, definitely. And then can vegan diets help with inflammation and recovery? Is there much research on that that you're aware of?
I'm sure there is research on it. That's way outside my area of expertise, I'm afraid. But I'm sure if you were to do a thorough search on something like PubMed, there will be research beginning to look in that area. I mean, just the research, if you type in vegan diet on PubMed anyway, it's increasing almost exponentially, the amount of studies on it year on year. I think the research is very much catching up with the prevalence of the diet and the public interest in the diet. So hopefully there will be some literature that can answer that question. I just can't.
Yeah. And I mean, I think if we're consuming plant-based food, then surely that's got to be good for us. You know, if we're to simplify it.
Absolutely.
Like you're saying, like it's easier to, well, it's you're more likely to consume more fiber, and these things have obviously been shown to be beneficial to our health in general.
Yeah, very well put.
Okay, so someone's asked what are the daily protein recommendations for endurance athletes specifically?
There's a study done a couple of years ago with relatively gold standard methods that suggested around 1.6 to 1.8 grams per kilogram. And I've seen that in other reviews since, that amount suggested. I've even seen it suggested on other podcasts talking about endurance, performance and protein. So I'd say that's a good target to go for, 1.6 grams. So 1.8 grams per kilogram per day. You'd then perhaps want to have that in a relatively even distribution of protein throughout the day, and it might be particularly important following training, just so you can quickly start recovering from that training and also replace some of those amino acids that have been oxidized during that training session, and the same following race or competition as well. And even more important, if you've got multiple training sessions in the same day and you've got a relatively limited time in which you can get food on board.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I'm not even going to try and attempt to do the math on the spot, but for if we're assuming that the 120 was 2.0 grams per kilogram of body weight for a 60 kilogram athlete, we can safely assume it's somewhere around 100 grams of protein per day for the same weight of athlete.
Yeah, for that person, yeah. I think for a vegan athlete, you probably want to gravitate towards the upper range of that, just to perhaps account for some of those essential amino acid deficiencies in some of those vegan foods.
Yeah. Okay, great. Someone said, I drink a lot of protein shakes because they're easy. Is this bad for me?
There's probably some, it's hard to say without the context there, but if you are also consuming a balanced, healthy diet, then having a number of protein shakes per day, no, that isn't going to be an issue at all, I don't think. Just need to make sure that you're having a balanced diet alongside that, and also consuming enough carbohydrate and fat to support your training needs as well.
Yeah. How can vegan athletes ensure that, what on the bike food do you recommend for vegan athletes?
Again, it probably depends a little bit on the on context. Most on the bike, I mean, I'm not a cyclist, I should add, so my personal expertise here is very limited, but I think most recommendations for on the bike nutrition would be more towards gels or perhaps liquid carbohydrates, and that'd be no different for a vegan athlete. You essentially want to optimize exogenous carbohydrate oxidation whilst you're on the bike, and they're going to allow you to do so.
Yep, definitely. Someone says, can you get enough protein without supplementing?
Definitely. Again, it just comes down to personal preference, convenience and lifestyle. If you're someone who leads a very, very busy life, perhaps protein supplements become very convenient. If you have the time and the desire to get all of your protein from non-supplemental sources, you can probably do so as well. I think it just depends on the context there.
Yeah,
but you definitely can do, yes.
Okay. You've already answered this slightly, but we'll just do it as a little recap. Do vegans need to eat more protein because plants have less amino acids?
It probably depends a little bit there on what plant-based sources you're having, meaning our data on microprotein would suggest that those individuals didn't need to eat anymore, just because microprotein was a very high quality protein source. Now, if you had another protein source that was just as higher quality, and that was occupying a large portion of your diet, you perhaps wouldn't need to eat more than, say, an omnivorous person. However, the other side of that is that if you were eating slightly lower quality protein sources, you might want to eat a little bit more of them just to make up for that slightly lower essential amino acid content. So, yeah, very context specific, but in general, let's say a vegan athlete might want to be the upper end of those ranges that are recommended.
Yeah, so up towards that 1.8 grams per kilogram. Okay, great. Someone's asking, what snacks are good vegan options that have a balanced macronutrient distribution?
Perhaps that's a situation where you gravitate towards protein-fortified foods. So not necessarily just a protein supplement, but maybe that's where a protein bar or something like that gives you a good bang for your buck. You're going to get a decent serving of protein there, and also a decent serving of carbohydrate and a little bit of fat. I think if that individual wants a balance of macronutrients, that might be a good way to go. To answer that succinctly anyway.
Yeah, definitely. For athletes who are racing multi-day ultras, and they're vegan. Is there anything specifically that you would recommend they're cautious of?
That's a really good question. It's something that I think we just got very little research on, that kind of that ultra distances and just exercising for that longer period of time, such higher energy expenditure. I think that might be one of the few occasions where perhaps it would benefit the athlete to consume some protein whilst they're doing the event, just because the move time is so high. They're not really getting any time to recover in between anything. So perhaps in that scenario, it would benefit them to try and consume some very easily digestible protein during that event, just to lessen breakdown a little bit and perhaps aid subsequent recovery. So perhaps in that scenario, protein during exercise would be a benefit.
Okay, great. I think that's all the questions from our athletes. What do you want our athletes to take away from this conversation with regard to vegan diets and the endurance athlete?
Well, I think to extrapolate the findings of the study, we do have proof of concept now that a well-considered vegan diet can probably support training adaptation to the same extent as that omnivorous diet. So if you are on a vegan diet, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to see decrements in terms of the adaptation you see. It just has to be well considered. And I guess more broadly as well, if you aren't already considering your protein intake as an endurance athlete, because endurance athletes do tend to pay perhaps a little bit less attention to protein, perhaps doing so, you may be able to get better recovery and potentially better subsequent adaptation and performance. So, perhaps pay a little bit more attention to your protein intake if you aren't doing so.
Definitely. Thank you so much. This has been super helpful. Where can our athletes keep up to date with your work and, just keep a finger on the pulse?
So if you type in Nutritional Physiology Research Group, University of Exeter, we've got a Twitter account, and we've also got a section of the university website. That's perhaps the best place to just keep abreast of what's going on within our research group.
Great. Thank you so much, Alistair. It's been such a pleasure.